Today, we go inside the left-wing, pro-Jeremy Corbyn campaign group, Momentum, and how to bring big tech back down to size. If we could travel back in time to the equivalent of this moment during the last election, things were looking terrible for Labour. The weekend before the vote, newspapers were predicting a large Conservative majority.
He lost, but returned to Labour HQ like a conquering hero. Jeremy Corbyn had defied the pollsters, the pundits, and most of his MPs. They'd prevented the much-predicted Tory landslide and instead notched up some extraordinary gains.
It's impossible to pinpoint exactly what happened, but many people think at least part of it had to do with an organisation called Momentum, founded just after Jeremy Corbyn became Labour leader. Critics believe it's a shadowy operation on the far left trying to take over the Labour Party. Supporters say its efforts in 2017, sending hundreds of activists into marginal seats and running a cutting-edge digital campaign, was critical in stripping the Tories of a majority. This year, Momentum has scaled up.
Oh, hello, how are you?
We're inside its headquarters. Its national coordinator, Laura Parker, wouldn't look out of place in a corporate boardroom.
You don't look like what comes to mind when people think Momentum activists.
This is what a Trotskyist looks like nowadays.
Exactly. It's all very mainstream. It's all very Marks and Spencers.
She's about to lead a meeting with two of her most senior staff who are making me feel old. Head of Communications Joe Todd is sat in front of a laptop covered in stickers, one of which says, "Never kiss a Tory." And he's drinking tea out of a mug that says, "Still hate Thatcher."
Ah, still hate Thatcher. Yeah, yeah.
Still hate Thatcher. You weren't born.
Still hate Thatcher. But I am from Penistone, and my granddad was a miner, so I'm allowed to still hate Thatcher, even if I was only born in 92.
Baby.
since before I was born.
Okay. Manifesto.
Momentum's not just a campaign group, it's also become a major player in shaping Labour policy. But their most radical ideas have been watered down in the party's manifesto that's just been launched. But they say they're happy with it.
It was real vintage Jeremy, wasn't it? It was really nice. And the quote at the end, I think we're going to put that on a tote bag, by the way.
Oh, why don't we put it on a T-shirt?
People aren't underestimating Momentum so much this time round, but some are criticising its tactics, with accusations that it's strong-arming candidates into safe seats and claims it's running an offensive strategy when Labour needs to defend the seats it already has. We've been following them during this election to understand what they're really about. From The Guardian, I'm Anushka Astana. Today in Focus, inside the Momentum machine. So all over the country, Momentum are running training events for activists. We're coming up to one here at a community centre in Streatham. It is very cold. It's pretty packed in there, and it's full of people of all ages who haven't been out on the doorstep yet, and they're having a training session on the type of things they might come across and how they might respond. The event is being run by a Momentum employee called Sasha.
Is it always this round?
Yeah, I mean, this is probably the smallest one I've done.
Really?
Yeah, it's a little dinky one, but usually we're about 100, 200 people.
The first thing she does is ask for personal stories and then favourite policies. Some of the Labour bread and butter ones come up, like the NHS. But the room does seem most excited about the more Corbynista, radical ideas like the four-day week.
Four-day week, yeah, no, I love that one.
Then we break off and practice selling them to each other on the doorstep.
Nice to meet you. My favourite Labour Party policy, actually I'm not sure if it is policy, but my favourite thing would be to abolish private schools.
Am I on the doorstep? Should I play the voter?
Yeah,
all right.
not. What do you mean you don't know if it's policy?
Well, I need to check this, and I would have checked it. But yeah, I don't believe that there should be children should be sent, you know, to different schools. I think there should be one education system for everyone, just like in Finland, that has the highest, you know, education results in the world.
What if people can afford it? Why don't they do it? I'm playing a part, by the way.
Yeah. Well, I've worked in education. I've worked in a school. I've worked in a primary school, and I just found it. I found it very sad that some children, basically the more affluent ones, go to certain schools, and the less affluent ones go to these schools.
Am I supposed to do one on you now? I think the Green New Deal is really important because the climate crisis is the worst thing facing our community right now, and there's been flooding down the road, and the reality is unless we like really do something dramatic on this, it's not going to make any difference.
There's been flooding all my life.
The weather is changing as a result of the climate crisis, and every year there's more and more flooding, and we need to change our economy, and we need to, it can help people here as well, because, you know, as well as reducing the carbon output, we can also get good jobs for people.
Okay, I agree with you about the jobs, but the question is, how are we going to pay for it?
Going to borrow loads. I don't know, how are we going to pay for it?
Stop cheating! I can see you.
The idea is to link policy to a personal story, which my partner seemed to do better than me. Momentum say that this approach, telling a story on the doorstep, is actually more radical than it might seem. The traditional way of canvassing is to go from door to door with a priority to ask people how they voted in the past, so on polling day you can make sure your voters actually come out. It's built on trying to keep the voters you already have as a minimum. This approach is more offensive and taps into the idea of trying to change people's minds, which fits with Momentum's philosophy of targeting vulnerable Tory seats, which proved quite successful last time.
So, at this point, we've got some lovely Guardian journalists that I'm going to ask to leave, because what we're going to do is talk about reframing difficult conversations, and I think this is a point where it'd just probably be nice for everyone to relax and be able to...
The following week, we go to Momentum's headquarters. It's well hidden away on this road full of Asian fashion shops selling saris, but we eventually find it.
Hello, come on up.
Oh, thank you.
We're inside the Momentum Nerve Centre. It's a bit unassuming, just sort of off a road in Finsbury Park in London. There's a load of bikes there in the corner, of course, everyone cycles in. Old red carpet, slightly frayed at the side. And it's kind of quite packed, full of people who are all working away. You can hear them in the background. The woman in the corner is doing a conference call, apparently. I thought she was just sort of speaking at a computer, but apparently there's like hundreds of people watching what she's saying. It's very high-tech in terms of people, what people are doing, but not very high-tech in terms of the calendars. Basically, four pieces of white A4 taped to the wall with post-it notes with 20, I guess they get changed every day, days till socialism, and then a load of hearts scrawled around it.
I think it's got the spirit of Momentum about it. You know, it
only
works.
Oat milk, no proper milk.
Right at the back of the office, tucked away in a corner, is a small group of people who are responsible for what Momentum is best known for, their online output.
If you want to see, that's views for week.
Sitting
one,
at his computer
three.
Is Paul Nicholson from the video team.
These guys over here are kind of doing meme stuff, where they do it kind of like in After Effects. They do kind of funny little videos. I don't know if you want to see one. So Dom is a very skilled animator in After Effects and things like that.
It's the Christmas Coca-Cola truck.
They've taken that famous Coke Christmas advert with the convoy of red lorries covered in lights, but they've switched the Coca-Cola signs for lines from the Labour manifesto. They've put a weird R&B version of the music over the top. You think it's Santa on the back of the truck, but the big reveal is that when he pulls down his fake beard, it's really Jeremy Corbyn.
Is that legal?
Yeah, I think there's...
Just out of interest.
No, it is, it's parody.
There's parody in laws about free use.
The next day, they tweeted out the finished video. Pretty much straight away, Coca-Cola's lawyers asked them to take it down, which they did. A Momentum statement described this as a shocking display of Grinch-like corporate power. Most of their videos do stay up, though, and a lot of people watch them.
Momentum at 8 million views, Conservatives at just over 6 million views.
A third of UK Facebook users have seen a Momentum video this election. That's millions more views than the official Labour Party output and the Conservatives. Momentum's online content has a similar feel this year to the stuff from 2017, but the campaign is not just about making videos. It's also about making sure that the voters who see them are in the right places.
That one in three young people in Canterbury watch one of our videos, so we can kind of make a connection there.
The digital team also designs political organising tools, and this time round they are much more sophisticated. In 2017, they had this thing where you put your postcode in and they sent you to your nearest marginal seat. This time, they've launched My Campaign Map that uses live data to send people where activists are actually most needed, and that keeps updating throughout the campaign. It's already been used almost 2 million times.
Marginal seats as well, so it's targeted.
You're targeting them specifically at marginals.
This sense of precisely targeting efforts, using the information and resources that you've got in the cleverest way possible, seems to be a defining characteristic of Momentum's campaign. At the other end of the building, in a makeshift office with paper-thin windows through which you can hear all of London driving by, is Laura Parker, the national coordinator of Momentum, who we heard from earlier. Like most of her colleagues, she's also drinking tea. Her mug simply says, kindness. If we're just trying to understand the landscape of the left, if you like, I mean, how do you work with the Labour Party? How do you work with the unions? Where do you fit in that jigsaw?
So we work, obviously, very closely with the Labour Party. You know, we're a slightly more nimble machine. Obviously, we're smaller. You know, we're not a historic party. And then clearly up and down the country, when we're mobilising activists, they're going into constituency Labour parties. And when we're running unseat events, we're doing them in partnership with the local Labour Party.
I mean, let's be honest, that not all MPs on the Labour Party have been friendly towards Momentum. I mean, do some of them not welcome you when you send people to help out?
No, because they all want to get elected. And, you know, and because we're campaigning for Labour. And I think in the end, I mean, it really highlights how some of the tribal differences are perhaps not the Grand Canyon-sized chasms that people sometimes like to pretend they are, and then the media often picks up on, you know, now public spats and all the rest of it sort of amplify. But the truth is, you know, every single Labour MP wants to win. And every single Labour Party member and every Momentum member, and they're all members of the Labour Party, wants to win.
What you've got here are loads of young, left-wing, passionate activists, and they've come up with really radical ideas, many of which have made it into the manifesto. But, you know, Josh and I were up in Hartlepool the other week, and some of those policies were really difficult to sell on the doorstep in Labour heartlands. For example, the four-day week just wasn't going down that well, and Corbynista activists were saying they wish people would think about whether these things will sell in places like that. I mean, is there a bit of a tension between the kind of mass, new, kind of excited membership and some of those heartland voters?
Well, look, I think there's no denying that there's a job of work to be done on communicating some of the policy areas, because I think they can sound very distant. And on the four-day week, I think I'd probably start by explaining that this isn't that you get 4 days of pay. And it is, you know, ambitious plans do. I mean, people were nervous about having a National Health Service. You know, today's radical idea is tomorrow's common sense, but for today, there's probably still a bit of a selling job on some of it. And there are places in the country where doors that you'll knock on where people will be a bit sceptical, and people won't trust necessarily that a four-day week doesn't mean you just get paid 4 days. And who'd blame them if they've just had 10 years of wage stagnation?
Stoke-on-Trent is the sort of place that Laura is talking about, and a few days later, Momentum organises a mass canvass in one of its constituencies, Stoke South. It's one of their unseat events where they call on dozens, even hundreds of activists to help in a marginal seat with a small Tory majority. It's a good place to test a couple of things about Momentum's strategy. First, is there a disconnect between what's going on in their London headquarters and training events and the mood in the Labour Party heartlands? And second, is it right to pour resources into trying to win Conservative-held seats? A major recent poll, the YouGov MRP, suggested Labour wouldn't win Stoke South, but it could lose the other two constituencies in the city. On the train, we meet up with Owen Jones, who wears two hats, one as a columnist for The Guardian, the other as an activist.
Owen Jones, here we are in a train vestibule. On a packed train to Stoke-on-Trent. It's an absolutely gorgeous day, frosty, beautiful countryside rolling by. Why are you here?
Why am I here? So, and this sounds like barking at thunder, right? But this is not a level playing field, this election. The Tories have a lot of money on their side. They have most of the press acting as de facto campaigning organisations. And the one thing that Labour's got is a lot of people. And you will often hear the mantra recited over and over again, the biggest membership of any political party in Western Europe. So what I do is, using social media basically, is organise or help organise people to come and knock on doors across the country. And that's the purpose of that, is to have conversations with people, to try and talk to people who are maybe wavering, and also to find out where the Labour vote is. But Momentum play the key role in organising people. When it was set up, Momentum was often very inaccurately portrayed as basically just this internal factional thing within the Labour Party that was going to go and deselect MPs. Not a single MP was deselected. But actually, what they've really gone and done is gone out into communities and kind of harnessed the energy that you first saw in the first leadership campaign and try and take it outwards by mobilising the biggest canvases that Labour have really had in its modern times.
How often are you out?
Oh my word. Yeah, I've not slept much during this election. I do maybe four of these a week at the moment.
Week.
I think three, yeah, about two. So basically two a week. Well, tomorrow I'm doing two in one day. Today I'm doing one, so I'm already doing three this weekend.
Who's paying for all these trains?
Me. Because you can't. I'd have to pay for it all, because no one, the local parties can't, because of election spend. There are very, very clear rules on election spend. So I spend, each year I spend thousands of pounds doing this.
Tell us about Stoke South.
So Stoke South was one of six seats that Labour lost at the last election compared to 2015. And in those seats, Labour's support actually went up. And actually, Labour got 47.5% in Stoke South. But the problem is the Tory vote went up a lot more. And if Labour doesn't win back places like Stoke-on-Trent South, then the Tories are going to win a majority and Boris Johnson is going to win.
So when we step onto the platform, Becky Sargent is there waiting for us already.
Hi, I'm Josh. Hiya, how are you doing?
We couldn't miss her. She's wearing a huge red Labour Party coat, which a colleague gave her last week on a particularly cold night of canvassing. It's at least two sizes too big for her, and she's got a Labour Party rosette pinned on top of it. Becky's got a lot of job titles.
I'm the campaign coordinator for Stoke South. I'm the treasurer. And I'm the branch secretary for local branch, yeah.
And she works full-time at the local FE college and is also a mother of an 18-year-old. She's giving us a lift to the Old Town Hall where there'll be speeches before the mass canvass begins.
Yeah, this is a lot cleaner than my car.
This is a really cute little car.
Can I be
dead right fan thingy where you take a selfie with me in the car. Because, like, you know, Owen Jones is in my car.
Hello.
Now, I might be wrong here, but I think Stoke has been... People feel like Stoke has been forgotten. So I think the Labour government beforehand did some really good things. Sure, start centres, you know, we had new schools built. But I don't think people realise, actually, you know, things that didn't happen were because, you know, we got hammered by Thatcher in the 80s. You know, and there was a lot of work that actually needed to be done that perhaps wasn't able to be done. And I think people blame Labour for that. And it's hard, the message on the doorstep, you know, it's hard. We've seen a shift, though, this week.
Really?
Yeah, it's been so nice. Monday night was the best canvassing session that I've done in a long time. Labour.
What are people
really
saying in terms of the shift? What's kind of coming up?
I think now people understand the manifesto. Yes, Brexit is a massive issue, but I think people now, when they think, actually, I've got my polling card and I've got to make a choice, can I actually vote Tory? And will they do it? I don't know. You know, because there's a lot of people who are like, I've never voted Tory before in my life, I can't do that. And some people are going to, for the first time, will vote Conservative because they want Brexit to be done, you know.
And they repeat that to you, that line.
Yeah.
It's really cut through some people.
It has, round here. But I think when it actually comes to it, I think people are starting to think, can I actually put that cross next to Conservative? I'm not saying that, you know, we've got a lot of work to do in the next 12 days.
And is it really welcome when you have a kind of momentum type event like this?
Oh yeah, definitely, yeah. Yeah. It is. I think there'll be a lot of people here today. Well, I know there'll be a lot of people here today.
She's right. The town hall is absolutely bursting at the seams. There are somewhere between 70 and 100 people, some sitting around, some queuing up for tea and cake. The Momentum event has scaled up the campaigning resources for today by a factor of about 4 or 5. They usually knock on about 1,000 doors a week, which they'll do today in a single go. In the back room are Becky and Sakina, who is a councillor in Lewisham and something called a Labour legend. That's a Momentum scheme through which people take 1, 2, 3 weeks off work to volunteer for the campaign and be posted all over the country. 1,800 have signed up.
Most people are bothered about Brexit, if I'm being really honest with you. So it's about explaining the Brexit policy, which somehow has been made really complicated when it's not. It's dead easy, that deal or that deal. You know? If not, education, NHS. Green New Deal isn't really something people are that bothered about around here, if I'm being really honest with you. It's more schools and hospitals and doctors. Because people can resonate with that.
Yeah, and what about Jeremy? What do they say?
They don't like him round here. So we have to point out that, you know, that the right-wing press have done a really good job on him, you know, and that it's policy, not people. You know, the Labour Party is run by 500,000 members. Jeremy is one of them. You know, and I've met him a few times. I really like the guy. I trust him. So I don't shy away from saying that, you know, I like Jeremy, but I also don't want to patronise someone who doesn't.
Then it's time for speeches. Owen goes last and gets people really hyped up.
And let's win this battle. Let's do
it. Everyone filters out, takes a big selfie, and then splits into groups who drive to different parts of the constituency. We're with Becky, Sakina, Owen, one person who found the event through Momentum's My Campaign Map tool, and John Landsman, the organisation's founder and chairman. We're also with the local Labour candidate, Mark McDonald. He's got quite a backstory. He grew up in a council tower block in Birmingham, worked for years in A&E, and then became a criminal defence barrister in London. Mark's an interesting case study for a piece about Momentum. They backed his selection and it upset some other candidates who were left-wing but local. He makes a funny face when we ask him if the people he beat are helping him in this campaign.
At the end of the day...
Oh, your face. Is that a no?
No, I think it would be fair to say. But I mean, I understand that. I'm not going critical of them. You know,
Mark says the same thing as Becky. The narrative is beginning to change on the doorstep. He says that people have been, quote, brainwashed by the right-wing tabloids. He admits it's tough, but thinks some are starting to change their mind as the campaign goes on. As we walk around, up driveways with amazing Christmas decorations.
Santa. Oh, I love Christmas. Is it actually December?
We do find some evidence to back this up.
He didn't vote at all last time, neither did, okay. And they think they might vote Labour this time.
Brilliant. You can
One thing that isn't hard to find is that same sense of disillusionment, particularly over Brexit, that we've seen all over the country.
The government, no matter which one it is, no matter who's in this, are all a complete waste of time. Brexit, why can't you just all sit down and get together and come up with a plan all together? Because no matter what Conservative come up with, you'll oppose it. No matter what you come up with, they'll oppose it. And then by doing that, by dragging it out, you're going to cost us hundreds of millions of pounds more.
So what we say is get the deal and let people vote on the deal. If they want the deal, we leave. Now that, to me, brings the country together again and solves the issue completely. Because right now, they're not agreeing in Westminster. So the only way to make an agreement and bring the country together is to give you the deal and say, do you want it? And if you don't want it, fine, you stay. If you do want it, we leave.
Yeah, I agree. So if we can get it, everybody can just get their heads together, get a deal, then great stuff.
But the Mark had a good go at trying to persuade Ian, but we didn't leave with an overwhelming sense of confidence that he was going to come out and vote. And as well as this resignation among some of the people opening the door, there's also a demographic problem about who will open it.
Well, it's just that. One of the challenges of doing these canvasses is most people answering doors are not young. Young people do not answer doors, as a general rule.
Hide behind the couch.
Well, even if they're in, if they're not WhatsApped or text first, they won't answer the door. So it's weird because actually the people you generally meet on the doorstep, I'd say are in their averagely 50s, 60s onwards. And they're actually less likely to vote Labour. We know that nationally. So one of the challenges is, in terms of youth turnout, how many young people actually turn out, given most young people are voting Labour? Well, we don't know, because we're not talking to them on the doorstep.
Are you talking to them on WhatsApp?
I think WhatsApp is the way forward, isn't it? And on the socials.
On the socials.
Getting them on the
with
socials.
With your million followers.
This is an issue that Momentum understands. In fact, just this morning, Laura Parker sent out a mass email to members with the title, "We've got a problem." And then young people don't often answer the door. It then goes on to ask for money to fund the production of online videos that young people do see to be targeted into marginals. Momentum's operation is unquestionably impressive, especially when you consider its shabby headquarters in London. This is a really powerful weapon for Labour. But questions are being asked about whether it is pointing in the right direction. I was speaking to one MP who admittedly is no fan of Jeremy Corbyn, who said, "We like it when Momentum activists come to our seats, but why don't they come more often to the ones that are already held by Labour and we need to hold on to?" She and many of her colleagues are looking at the polls with 6 days to go, and they're worried.
I think it's getting better and better.
The name John Lansman may not mean much to some, but he built Momentum. And in Stoke on the doorstep, in his thick puffer jacket, hat and leather gloves, he thinks this campaign group can still prove the polls wrong.
Can I just ask you, like, obviously the polls are getting tighter, but that YouGov poll was pretty miserable, and the MRP. And one of the things that Jeremy Corbyn seems to have responded to it by saying is that we've got to be a bit more defensive rather than offensive. And we're obviously here in a seat that Labour wants to win.
Yeah.
And that poll had the other two Stoke seats lost. Is there an argument to shift your emphasis now?
Well, we've always been targeting a combination of defensive and offensive seats. The thing I would say about the MRP poll, about the YouGov poll, the enormous late registration, it's not clear that they got that. And, you know, we've recruited well over 100,000 people to register in marginal seats. So, you know, all of those factors, I think, could work in our direction. You know, you can't be complacent, but there's plenty of room for optimism.
Can I just say, Momentum's like your baby, and... Yeah. You launched and to support Jeremy Corbyn. You're supporting Jeremy Corbyn. You are fully behind him in this election. We're not making any predictions. Does Momentum last beyond Corbyn? Is it about more than Corbyn?
Momentum's here for good. I mean, you know, we're here to stay. We're here for the long run. Whatever happens after this election, we'll be here. You know, we'll have an important job to do, and we'll do it.
do go to the website to read all the political reporting from The Guardian and Observer in this final week before polling day. Our correspondent, Kate Proctor, has written about momentum. Coming up, Rana Faruha on how to regulate big tech giants. Now, whether it's Google, Facebook, or Amazon, we live in a world profoundly shaped by big tech, from how we chat with friends to shopping, reading the news, and much, much more. But for author and journalist Rana Faruha, big tech's colossal size shouldn't overwhelm us. It's an industry like any other, one that can and must be regulated.
One of the biggest myths of our time is the notion that big tech can't be regulated. Like the financial sector, big tech wants you to think that it's special, but it's only special in the sense that it's become bigger and more powerful than any other industry in history. I came home one day, opened a credit card bill, and saw a large number of tiny charges in the amounts of $1.99, $3, and so forth. And at first I thought I'd been hacked. Then I realized that my son, who has my password, had been buying things for an online football game that he was playing. And when I quizzed him about this, it became clear to me that he was in a kind of a cognitive fog. He'd been offered this game for free, and I put free in quotation marks. But then whilst he was playing, he was being pulled by the use of persuasive technologies down this rabbit hole of buying in-app purchases. The ways in which these app companies make their money is essentially by using casino gaming techniques and behavioral nudges to keep people playing, to keep kids clicking, to keep all of us buying, so that then not only do they sell us stuff and make a lot of money, but our data can be mined. The heads of these companies will try and throw a lot of jargon at the wall to see what sticks. And they try and use issues of complexity and size to argue for special privileges. I mean, every industry would like to have special privileges. But as always, the best questions are the simplest ones. What are these companies doing to enrich society, to enrich citizens, not just consumers? And if there are negative externalities to what they're doing, what are they and how can we stop them? So on that note, I would say that I really think we are at a tipping point. I think we are going to see some changes coming down the pike. And I would start first with the basic notion of having an equal playing field. Amazon functions very much like a 19th century railroad. It owns the platform for e-commerce, but it can also conduct commerce and preference its own products. So I think we're going to start seeing regulators come in and just, frankly, take the low-hanging fruit of enforcing the existing paradigms as regards big tech. Now, beyond that, I think you probably are going to see a bigger and bigger push to roll back the loopholes that were created in the mid-1990s. Now, you and I both know the traditional publishers, television networks can't do or say anything they want. There are legal implications. Given that a Google or a Facebook is essentially just a giant content monetization firm, a giant advertising firm, there's just no reason that they shouldn't be regulated like a media firm. Beyond that, one of the other big areas where I think you're going to see a lot of change is in taxation. One of the things that I must say bothers me the most is when you hear the CEOs of tech firms saying, well, if only there was more and better education, if only nation states would step up and train their workforces properly, then, you know, we would be able to employ them and all would be well. Well, guess what? We need tax revenue to do that, which means you actually have to contribute in the countries where you're making your profits. And already we're seeing a huge debate in the OECD, in the UK, in Europe, in the US. And some countries like India have just simply started slapping on new taxes, location-based taxes for these companies. The bottom line is they are going to have to give back some of the wealth pie that they have hoarded in order to make sure that this new industrial revolution that we are in the midst of, this digital revolution, doesn't become a zero-sum game.
That was Rana Faruha, author of Don't Be Evil, The Case Against Big Tech. That's it for today. Many thanks to everyone who contributed to the piece about momentum and to Rana Faruha. This episode was produced by Josh Kelly and Courtney Youssef. Sound design was by Axel Cocoutier. The executive producers are Nicole Jackson and Phil Maynard. Have a lovely weekend, and we'll be back for the final week of this election campaign on Monday.